Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Very good to have you with us this morning. Police in Golden, Colorado say they still do not have a motive determined for the rampage that killed 10 people at that King Supermarket yesterday afternoon. Coming up next hour on Air Talk, we'll have the very latest details on what law enforcement is attempting to learn about this terrible attack. But right now, we turn our attention to COVID-19, where the news has been looking up day by day. Joining us to talk about where we stand from UCLA School of Public Health, epidemiologist and professor of medicine, Dr. Timothy Brewer. Dr. Brewer, it's such a pleasure to have you back with us.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing well. And I want to thank you again for this year-long process of you being so willing to be with us weekly to share your expertise. It's much appreciated, and I hear daily from listeners who are so thankful. So we appreciate it and just want you to know how appreciated you are.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's start first with some concerning news from the U.S. FDA that AstraZeneca's vaccine data of its U.S. clinical trials, the FDA is concerned that there may be some out-of-date data that is included in the submission. Can you tell us what the concern is?
So it's a breaking news story, so we're still learning, but apparently what happened was the AstraZeneca announced the data based on their planned interim trial results from February 17th, which showed 79% efficacy. And then the Data Safety and Monitoring Board said, well, wait a minute, we actually have additional data from after February 17th, and you should include that as well, which suggests that the overall efficacy may be closer to the range of 65 to 70%. 5% rather than 79%.
And how significant is that difference? Does that lower degree of efficacy make it more challenging to get emergency use authorization here?
Not necessarily, because the target was 60%. So both of those numbers are over 60%. I think what's really unusual in this situation, Larry, is this is all playing out in public. And normally what would happen is the Data Safety and Monitoring Board would contact the company privately and there would be a discussion and they would come to some consensus.
All right. And what are the implications for so much of the world where the AstraZeneca vaccine is the primary or only vaccine being offered?
So, again, hard to know at this point, because what we'd really like to see is the breakout of the data for how well does it protect against death, hospitalization, and serious disease. And so far, most of our vaccines have held up pretty well on those criteria, even when they haven't necessarily prevented mild or moderate disease.
So you would still be hopeful that even if it's the only vaccine, as long as it's widely administered, that it will control the spread in those countries?
Exactly. So we have good data that it seems to work well against the UK variant, what's known as B117. And then there was a recent study out of South Africa published last week in the New England Journal of Medicine, which suggested that it was not effective in preventing mild or moderate disease from the B1351 variant in South Africa. So I think we just need to see the data to really know where do we stand with this and our other vaccines against the different variants.
I wonder, though, if this means that there are going to be many doses of AstraZeneca that end up being delayed or unused, because There's already been some reluctance in the European Union to use it. There was the hold for a few days because of concerns about blood clots that were later found to be unrelated to the AstraZeneca vaccine. But I just wonder if sort of, you know, bit by bit, these pieces of news undermine public confidence in taking this one.
I think you're exactly right. I think that's a very big concern, and it will be a challenge for rolling this vaccine out. And yet we still need it. Not only do we have shortages within the United States, but globally, there are many countries that haven't even started vaccinating any of their citizens at all. And we need to get a better job of getting vaccine more widely distributed around the world.
And what are the reasons for that? Are these countries that have delayed requesting the vaccine or have put in requests and they're at the bottom of the list with the various pharmaceutical companies? Do we know what the challenge is?
Well, it's twofold. So one is just production, how fast can you make the vaccine? But the second, unfortunately, is nationalism. And so a number of countries, the United States included, have prohibited exporting vaccine until their own citizens are vaccinated. And as Deputy General, as Director General of the WHO, Tedros Adhanom said, you know, we really have to vaccinate the entire world if we want to stop this pandemic. We can't just focus on vaccinating the countries where the vaccines are made.
And you look now at it's about 14%, I think, of the American adult population that has been fully vaccinated, have had both of their shots. Would you have thought that here, you know, third week of March, that we'd be at this point?
Yeah, I'm hoping that we'll continue to ramp up both in our supply and our ability to vaccinate. One of the things I found a little discouraging is that here in Los Angeles County, we have the capacity to vaccinate over 600,000 people, and yet we only had enough vaccine to vaccinate about 300,000 people. So hopefully supply will continue to ramp up to meet the needs of both our population and other populations around the world.
We're joined today by Dr. Timothy Brewer, epidemiologist and professor of medicine at UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health. Dr. Brewer has served on the advisory boards of the aforementioned World Health Organization, as well as the National Institutes of Health and the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. If you have questions for Dr. Brewer about COVID-19 or about the vaccination process, about the vaccines themselves, as we do this every day on Air Talk, we bring you the very latest information at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. You can also ask your question via Twitter at AirTalk. You can also post on the AirTalk Facebook page or post on the AirTalk page at kpcc.org and let us know what you think. One thing I wanted to ask you about was a piece I read in the Wall Street Journal by Jeremy Devine, in which he was raising the issue of what's called long COVID or long haulers who suffer significant symptoms months after they had seemingly recovered or didn't really ever have a full recovery from COVID-19. And the point that he makes in this piece is that there's a particular advocacy group that's behind the research on this, and that they also advocate on behalf of patients identified with things like chronic fatigue syndrome and Lyme disease and other things where there are questions about to what degree, if any, is there a psychological component in the perception or the reality of symptoms. And I just wonder your thoughts about this, and what do you think we know about the long COVID symptoms, and how do you think we should consider it at this point?
So, complicated issue, and there are a couple of different factors there. So let's start with some data. One of the things we know is that we now have studies to show that people who have been hospitalized with COVID-19, if you start to follow them months out, continue to have symptoms like chest pain, dizziness, palpitations, and some neurologic symptoms as well. It's been described as sort of a brain fog. We also know from a study done here in California that if you look at non-hospitalized patients, this was done out of UC Irvine where they looked at medical records, that some proportion of them, even people who have been asymptomatic but have documented COVID infection, will go on to develop some of these same symptoms. At the same time, there are a number of people who have not had documented COVID infection, think they may have had COVID, and are complaining of these symptoms. And the question is, are we really dealing with one problem or multiple different problems?
All right, we'll continue with Dr. Timothy Brewer, our guest with us on Air Talk today. We'll be taking your questions about COVID-19 at 866-893-5722. You can tweet at Air Talk, post on the Air Talk Facebook page, or post on the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. So glad to have you with us on Air Talk, the very latest on COVID-19, with Dr. Timothy Brewer joining us from UCLA School of Public Health. Dr. Brewer, as we were coming up on the break, we were talking about the long COVID symptoms, and you were saying we're still trying to figure out in individual cases whether this is COVID later on down the road or might be other illnesses. And I wonder if you could elaborate on that challenge of determining that.
So you're exactly right, Larry. So what we know is that people are not well, and the question is why? And that, as someone who's been practicing medicine for 30 years, that can be extremely difficult to tease out exactly what's going on. And it's frustrating both for the patients, their families, and the healthcare workers, because you can't necessarily do a test and say, aha, this is the problem. And you just have to keep working with the patients to try to really understand where they are and figure out what you can do to try to get them better. But not all of this will be COVID, but some of it certainly will.
We have some other listener questions. Judy in Playa del Rey, wondering if the UK variant of COVID-19 is causing severe symptoms or more severe symptoms for people vaccinated with Moderna or Pfizer. Do we know? And I'm not sure if she means people who would have been exposed to the UK variant at the time, or if they were having it before they were vaccinated. I'm not quite sure.
So what we know about the UK variant and the vaccines is that the vaccines are very effective against the UK variants, which is good because that's probably the most transmissible or easiest to spread variant right now circulating around the world and is increasing in the United States. But at least right now, the vaccines seem to remain very effective against that particular variant. There are some data to suggest that it may cause more serious disease in unvaccinated individuals, but that's still not clear.
And I think what her question was about the, after you receive particularly the second dose of the vaccine, how people will have sometimes a day or two of some difficult to deal with symptoms in some cases, whether exposure to the UK variant has any effect on that.
On side effects, not that we know of. In fact, what we do know is that people who have had documented COVID infection before and then get either Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine have a very vigorous immune response, so that after one dose, it's essentially the equivalent of two doses in someone who hasn't previously had COVID. That having been said, always get your second dose if you've got either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine.
We have a question. I'm not sure whether this is in your area of expertise, Dr. Brewer, but Alicia asks specifically about garment workers and when factory workers are going to be prioritized for getting vaccinated. Do you have any information? We certainly have people that are emergency services responders, people who are doing retail work, but about those in the garment industry, do we know?
So I'm not aware of anything specific in the garment industry. However, right now, anyone who is a worker who has a comorbid disease should talk with their healthcare provider because, as you probably know, on March 15th, the state changed the recommendation. Anyone over the age of 16 who's at higher risk for serious disease from COVID-19 is now eligible to be vaccinated. So if you have high blood pressure, diabetes, other medical problems, talk with your healthcare provider because you may be eligible to be vaccinated now.
Alicia wants to point out that many of the garment workers were very early on making masks, face coverings for people when we had that intense shortage very early in the pandemic. And I'm glad you brought that up, Alicia, and we appreciate the workers who did that and set aside other things to make those masks. Ivy in Altadena asks, are there any pre-existing conditions or anything that we know about kids who have developed that rare MIS-C, multisystem inflammatory syndrome, which has sometimes occurred for children getting COVID-19?
So I'm not aware of any preconditions. That would be a good question to ask a pediatric infectious disease specialist because I don't work with kids. But as far as I know, no.
All right, 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Michael in Mar Vista says, I'm contemplating going to France in May. Will my being fully vaccinated protect me from the new variants? Michael said he's got the Moderna vaccine.
So, Michael, what we know is that the vaccine seemed to be very effective against the UK variant, and that's the primary variant spreading in Europe at the moment. However, all of the vaccines seem to be less effective against both the South Africa and the Brazil variants. And so the concern is whether or not those two variants will spread globally. Vaccines do seem to prevent serious disease, hospitalization, and deaths, even with those variants, but all of the vaccines are clearly less effective against those two variants.
Dr. Brewer, to what extent do you think this 14% of American adults fully vaccinated, and you know the percentage, of course, quite higher than that for those who've had first dose. How much of that do you think is coming into play with the fairly stable lower rates of COVID we're seeing?
So I think it's certainly helping. Where it's probably playing out more is in locations that were hit particularly hard, like Los Angeles County. So if you look at the Los Angeles County data, our numbers are still coming down, right? So we're under 2% test positivity now. We're about 500 cases a day, well below where we were at the beginning of January. We've had about 3.2 million people who've gotten one dose of vaccine. We've had about 1 million people who've gotten two doses. Another 1.2 million people have had reported COVID, and probably another 2+ million people who had COVID and were not diagnosed. So we may actually be getting close to that herd immunity level here in Los Angeles County. Country as a whole, we probably still have a ways to go before we're there.
In the European countries that are seeing a resurgence of COVID-19, do you largely attribute that to the delay in vaccination and that they're trailing in their percentage of a vaccinated population to what we see here or the UK?
I think it's unclear what's going on exactly in Europe. So we know that in Italy, for example, they're having a fairly substantial surge, averaging about 25,000 cases a day. Yet in Spain and the United Kingdom, two countries that were hit very hard, their numbers are still coming down. France and Germany are somewhere in between. I suspect in the UK, it's probably the vaccinations are playing an important role because they were very aggressive at rolling out the AstraZeneca vaccine and are ahead of most other countries in Europe. But exactly what's happening in Italy and some of the other countries is a little unclear at this point.
But there's no evidence to suggest that people who've been vaccinated are getting sick in Italy.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Also wanted to ask you, Dr. Brewer, about Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. Say they've tested more than 4,000 recently diagnosed patients who were given a two-antibody combo drug Regeneron developed and found it cut the risk of hospitalization or death by 70%. All of the 4,000 in the study were outpatients and at risk of developing serious illness, either because of their age or other health conditions such as obesity or high blood pressure. The drug also cut the median recovery time from 14 days to 10, and the drug's benefits were similar at half the dose currently allowed in the U.S. under emergency use provisions. This study has not yet been peer-reviewed, but Dr. Brewer, this sounds like a very positive preliminary finding on treating people with COVID.
No, that's exactly right. And now this is the third in a series of studies that have looked at individuals who are at high risk for hospitalization. So they tend to be older, have comorbid disease, have documented COVID-19 infection, and then were either given monoclonal antibody preparations or were given convalescent plasma. And in both situations, both the convalescent plasma, which has antibodies against COVID-19 in it, or the manufactured monoclonal antibodies were effective in reducing the risk of hospitalization in those who got them. But the key there was they were given early on in disease before people got sick.
All right. Dr. Brewer, we appreciate it so much. Thank you, as always, for joining us. I look forward to talking with you hopefully next week.
Thank you very much for having me.
Epidemiologist, professor of medicine at UCLA School of Public Health, Dr. Timothy Brewer, one of our tremendous panel of experts.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.